Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising,
the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, feminist, pansexual ho living in New York City.
And Zakua, the complete opposite of Sam.
What?
I'm not black.
Oh my God, wait, you have to leave. Not even the door, see the window.
Oh my God.
It's fucked up. Oh yeah, my pronouns are she and her.
Yes, I am Akua. My pronouns are she or her. I'm black. I'm sexually fluid. And I'm somehow menstruating again. So yeah.
Keep those over there. Keep your pheromones to yourself. We have two types of episodes on this here show. They are group episodes and interview episodes. On interview episodes, I, Sam, the principal host here, and one of my rotating lovely co-hosts, talk to folks with insightful perspectives on sex, love, dating, gender, and or race. And on group episodes, all of the hosts come together to chat about sexual current events in the world, our lives, and yours. This episode is an interview episode.
And it is the last episode.
Yes.
Of our mental health
March series. Yes, we did a thing, y'all. We did a thing. And on this episode, we are going to be speaking with Dr. Natalie Jones about dating narcissists, being in relationships with narcissists.
Narcissistic personality disorder.
Yes, narcissistic personality disorder. Coping mechanisms, next steps, the type of symptoms that can arise from dating a narcissistic person. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's mad insightful. Before we get into that, we have a couple of short segments. They are
Bay of the Week,
where we talk about people who we find attractive.
Ho of the Week,
where we shout out y'all, the homies, the listeners, and the fans.
Self-care tip of the week,
where we give you some advice on how to take care of yourselves
and pay a hoe.
Where we beg for the money that we desperately need so that things like South by Southwest don't put us into debt, y'all.
Yes.
Because that should be costing money, y'all.
And if you would like to follow along with the conversation had on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner Ho Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Pod In so other people can see it.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to pay us to speak at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, we would love to do so. So please to book us, send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. First up is Bay of the Week.
So our Bay of the Week, because I'm co-opting it,
yes.
Is Nolani, the model, a.k.a. Filthy Silky. She is an extremely gorgeous model, a smart, funny, super nice, supportive member of the IHU
family. Yeah.
Family.
She was the bartender at IHU
Live show.
Yeah, in January.
On the top of last year.
Yes. We love her.
And she killed it.
Yeah, she did.
Y'all remember her, don't worry.
Yeah, if you were there, you have to remember her. Yeah.
And Nolani is actually running for Miss Jet Set 2019.
Mm-hmm.
You may have seen a quick story we posted. And then an Instagram story we posted.
Yeah.
About that for her.
Mm-hmm. It is a modeling competition where the winner wins, like, I think it's like mad money to travel the world or something like that, mm-hmm. which is dope. And I would love for Nolani to do that. And her competition is like a whole bunch of like, white girls. So I'm like, I want her to win.
She I want her to win. Currently in the top five.
Is
I think
she?
Like top four, top three. She like oscillates between the two.
Oh shit.
And she needs to be number one.
Yeah, she needs to win, y'all. She needs to win. So we want y'all to head over to the link in the description of this episode to give her a vote, because she's dope.
No, she's dope.
And she's also integral into the show. Like, for no reason, she'll just post a picture of herself wearing the Inner Ho Uprising
crop
top.
She attends all of our events.
Yes.
And shows out and twerks for the people.
Yes. Donates her labor.
And that, she's also one half of our favorite couple.
Yes. Jolani. Did yes. you see the fact that they have an Instagram now?
I saw it and
it's
I was like, I needed
of all time.
This.
Exactly.
Thank you.
And that's exactly what I said also.
Thank you.
I was like, this is so cute. And you might know her boyfriend, Joel, from our episode Pretty Boy Ting in season 3, where he was talking about, you know, femininity.
Mm-hmm.
Feminine boy. Yes. So they're cute. We love them. Vote for Nolani. Hashtag vote for Nolani. Nolani 2019. All right, next up is Ho of the Week. And we have so many people to shout out. And that's because so many people have supported us. And then also we haven't done this in like 4 weeks.
You know?
Because every episode has been pre-recorded. First up, we want to shout out Carlisha, Andrea, Whitney, Tammy, Ivy, Pat from the Decolorist podcast, and Caro. Everyone that we met, everyone that supported us, everyone that gave advice, everyone that came through for IHU and Podcast Baddie Brigade South by Southwest things. So like Carlisha and Andrea went to the live show. We gave them passes. Whitney is a newer listener who came through to the podcast meetup. Tammy is dope and nice. And when I was like on Instagram, like, oh my God, Austin is so white. She was like, yeah, it's white as hell, girl. Here's some advice on how to take care of yourself out there. And then she came through to the to my panel and to Tea with Queen and Jay's live show. And then she kind of like rolled with us for a little bit. That was dope.
That is support.
Yeah. Ivy is a listener who is friends with Dr. Janina Jeff from the Spotify competition. And Janina told her about us like in Austin, because Janina was in Austin also. And then Ivy started listening in Austin and then came through a couple of days later to the podcast meetup. Oh. She liked the show so much. Yeah.
Welcome, Ivy, to the whole army. Yeah. We welcome you with open arms.
Yep. And then Pat was there with Caro, and Pat is from the Decolorist podcast, and she came through, and Caro took like the main picture of everybody, and they were like so sweet and nice, and yeah, it was just a good time.
I'm so sad that I didn't get a chance to meet any of you.
Yeah, I'm sad too. We gotta do it again sometime. Yeah, but maybe not in Austin though.
Ooh. It sounded like a hard time.
It's just really annoying. But the city itself. But I had a great time. So also shout out to the entire Podcast Baddie Brigade.
Of course.
The folks who were there. I think we all had a lovely time together and we did some pretty great shit together. Mm-hmm. I'm going to shout this out now. You can listen to the panel that I did, Where the Podcast Black Sense, with Queen from Tea with Queen and Jay, Barry from Podcast in Color, and my new best friend, y'all, Landy Watley. Landy Watley from Howard University. Yeah, it was good. I reposted it on the Inner Hall Uprising SoundCloud page, but I'll also put the link for that in the description of this episode.
Yeah.
Because I think it was a good, insightful conversation.
It was. I listened and I was like, look at the people I know doing bomb ass shit.
Do good things. Always. Do good, smart
y'all
things.
Y'all better tell these people.
Yes.
Why they voices.
And why we fucking need money.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Feminist Fatal, who painted us.
Drew.
Oh, that was drawing?
It was drawings.
Well, there you go.
I never seen more realistic depictions.
Seriously.
Of
seriously.
Like all of the drawings looked like a picture.
Literally.
Of us. Like, yes. I can find the picture.
Me too.
Put it side
That's
by side.
That's my Cupid's bow, y'all. There it goes.
Just be like, well, god damn.
Yeah. It looks like us, but it wasn't like a mirror copy of a picture. So it was like renderings of
yes,
us.
Yes.
She made
so
you a queen, bitch.
Detailed.
And she gave you a fucking choker that had your name on it.
When I said
it's very cool.
I loved that picture so much that I sent it to everybody I knew. I made it my Instagram profile.
I made it my WhatsApp contact.
I made it my Instagram profile picture because it used to just be the black queen emoji.
Oh.
So I was like, here is me.
It's me as
now.
An actual black queen.
And then I put it on all my dating app sites because.
What those niggas be saying about it now?
Oh, I muted all of those.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know what they're going to be saying.
Can I draw you, ma?
If you can make it look like this, yes.
I don't know if you remember this because this was before you were on the show, but it's something that I would have put in a group chat. Someone drew me like the first season and it was so bad.
I think I remember that.
It was so bad.
I think I remember that. That was years ago.
We appreciate all of your art.
We do. We do.
Oh, man. I got to go try to find that picture because it was literally one of the funniest things that I've ever seen in my entire life. And it was supposed to be my face. Sorry, y'all. I live in like the fake suburbs, so you might hear a weed whacker in the background.
Niggas think it's spring and they get the garden and
they really
it's
not.
Cold.
So thank you, Feminist Fatal, for that. Also, thank you to everyone who came through to this month's March Sex Trivia. So we had Kathia and her sister who came all the way from Boston to hit up Sex Trivia. And they won second place.
Oh my gosh.
And they won in a second. We finally did a tiebreaker. Yeah. We did a tiebreaker. Kathia was the representative from her team, and there was another big team, and some masculine presenting person was the representative of that team, and Kathia killed it.
Oh my God. Go ahead, Kathia. Go
two
ahead.
Two back to back. They didn't even, because it's best out of three, they didn't have to go to three. That was dope. And then shout out to. I think it was pronounced Lanai. She came through on her own. I was like, you playing on your own or with the team? She was like, on my own. I was like, that energy. And she ended up winning.
Go ahead. So, go ahead, yeah. Lanai. That's that beautiful big ass energy. Yeah, we need.
It was. And this beautiful ass red lipstick. And then also shout out to the Pretty Young Thoughts who came through, Team Hola, who were so cute. They kept like drawing pictures of like labia and stuff like that on their things. And it was really nicely drawn. And then the three amigos. I just really love the names this week.
Y'all are, yeah, this time, this event, y'all are.
Yeah, it was a good one. And then we also had QN, who was a person named Gemini's team. So thank you everyone for coming through to this week's sex trivia. Last but not least, thank you to everyone who pays the hoes, because this time around, you actually funded Rob's travel to South by Southwest. All right, so special shout out to Allie N, Heather O, Carla LT, Amith C, Leslie L, Kanazia I, Demario G, Ali Lou, Anna Maria, Travis T, Whitley H, Samantha F, and Rachel P, who bought merchandise. Someone by the name of Harlem Shakespeare, Geos Forma, Philip M, Janina Jeff. Woo woo! That's Janina Jeff, who we did the live show with on at South by Southwest. Shout out to Janina. It was a very good live show. One day that'll be released on our feed. We also have Whitney, who we met at South by Southwest. And Steph is our most recent patron at the time of this recording. Thank you, everyone, so much.
Thank you. Y'all it's keep because the lights
of you.
On.
Yes, it is because of you we exist. Now let's go into self-care tip of the week. So my self-care tip of the week, and I'm pretty sure I did this last year, but it's always relevant to me every single year. So we're a couple of weeks away from my mom's birthday. If you don't listen to the show, or if you do, you might know that my mom passed away a couple of years ago. So every year I've been trying to do traditions around the date of her passing and then also her birthday. So she was like really big into like volunteering and stuff like that. So last year, me and my family did, and her birthday is also around Earth Day. So we did like a specific Earth Day volunteer session. And this year I'm going to do that again. And then also she was a foster child. So I'm going to volunteer at a home for like people who have aged out of the foster care system. So my self-care tip of the week is, if you have lost someone and you want a way to kind of like commemorate their memory, one thing that you could do is do like an annual tradition that reminds you of them. And it doesn't have to be something like volunteering or anything like that. Like if your grandpa really loves soccer, play an annual soccer game or something, just to like, you know, they're not here physically anymore, but they are always in your memories. And that's a way to like cope, and then also remember them in a positive light, as opposed to you know, just being sad about it, even though it's totally valid to be sad about it, but mm-hmm. it's a way to like incorporate it into your life.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Some good ideas are visiting their gravesite, mm-hmm. if they are buried.
Yes.
Eating at their favorite restaurant.
Yes. Making their favorite food. Yeah.
I've drawn a blank. But yes,
there's mad things. Many ways. We don't know them because those are your loved ones. Mm-hmm. But yeah, whatever they liked to do. Or if they didn't like something, let's say they shit-talked Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
That day? We that's having what you a do group discussion. Exactly. Invite me over. I got some words.
Yeah, that's actually something my mom did do a lot. I might add that to the annual tradition. That's funny. The Kardashians. That's how she would pronounce it.
New York ass.
That's how I feel about the Kardashians, Sammy. No, my mom was not an Italian man from Brooklyn. She just spoke like that for whatever reason.
Because she's a New Yorker. Yes. She's a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Born and bred.
Yeah. She make a Queens all day every. All right. If you would like to help support this show and block out the weed whacker noise in the background, you can do so by going to innerhoeuprising.com and clicking the button Pay a Hoe Once or Pay a Hoe Monthly. Pay a Hoe Once takes you to our PayPal, which is also paypal.me/innerhoe, and Pay a Hoe Monthly takes you to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/innerhoeuprising. So Patreon allows you to support us on a more consistent basis. PayPal is just like a one-off whenever you can or whatever you feel like it. On Patreon, if you donate anywhere from $2 a month and up, you get early access to ticketed IHU events and things like VIP hours and things like that we throw before events sometimes. And with $5 and up a month, I have literally started typing the newsletter.
I saw the document. I was like, look at Samantha. Yeah.
And I did the layout like a month ago or something like that. So it is almost in fruition. And also I started posting video content, and we just now recorded a little video thing. So whenever like there's off time, I figured it's a good time to just be like, yeah. Yeah. stuff for you guys, for you $5 and up a month type of people. And then also you get the early access and things like that. And then also you just get to support one of your favorite shows. So that's cool too. And you can donate any less or any more. It's just a more consistent way to pay a ho. Other ways to help support us are by leaving like an Apple Podcast review or a Stitcher review. If you use CastBox, you can comment on our podcast on CastBox. If you use Himalaya, you can also comment on us there, which is good because the more people who engage with the show, the more, I guess, attention the show gets. So we get more and more listeners. You can tweet about the show. You can write up about us in your blog. You can write up about us in your fucking academic journal like Carlisha did.
Huh?
Forgot Carlisha. To mention her for that. But yeah, Carlisha also did that.
Snatched my wig. Yeah. I was like, look at Carlisha.
Exactly. Exactly. You can put a link to us in your group chat. You can nudge your coworker. You can nudge your best friend. You can nudge the man sleeping on your shoulder on the train. One, to get him off of you, but then also to listen to our show. And you can walk down the street wearing Inner Ho Uprising merchandise, which you can buy at innerhouseuprising.com/merchandise. Now let's get into the actual show. Now we're going to go into our topic of the day, which is called Fuck It. Today we're talking about narcissistic personality disorder with Dr. Natalie Jones.
Yes, and Dr. Natalie Jones, I am going to say the letters behind her name.
Yes,
put some respect on it. So Dr. Natalie Jones, PsyDLPCC, pronouns she and her, is a licensed professional clinical counselor. That's what the LPCC stands for, y'all. And a postdoctoral intern. She currently has a private practice called Lifetime Counseling and Consulting in California, where she specializes in work with women who have been in emotionally and psychologically abusive relationships with narcissists, as well as with individuals who were previously incarcerated for various crimes. Dr. Jones also has a podcast called A Date with the Darkness Podcast, which specializes in providing education and tips from healing from narcissistic relationships.
Welcome, Dr. Jones.
Hey, Dr. Jones.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And we're really excited to hop into this conversation about narcissistic personality disorder. But for folks who don't know, what is the working definition of narcissistic personality disorder?
Okay, yeah. So I'll be glad to explain that for you. And just a little disclaimer before I get started, I want to let people know that I am a licensed psychotherapist, but I am not their licensed psychotherapist, and that my interview with you guys should not be a substitute for therapy with a licensed professional. But thank you so much. So what narcissistic personality disorder is, it really occurs in about 1-2% of the population. So it's pretty rare. And it involves basically unstable emotions. Person is very egocentric. They basically feel like the world revolves around them and is there for their taking. And so what you will see is a person that is extremely manipulative, and they are there to use people for their own personal benefit or personal gain. They view people as objects. Again, that kind of goes back into using people for their own personal gain. They don't see people as human beings. A lot of times what they do is that they view people as being beneath them. So they have what can be considered by the lay person is like a godlike complex. So they're excessively concerned with power or control, or having some sort of special or grandiose features over other people, like being more beautiful, being more brilliant. And I'm up here and you're down here. I think one of the other hallmarks is that they lack empathy. And so people know a narcissistic person for not really being compassionate or kind because they lack empathy or they don't validate feelings that are not their own. And so in the excessive preoccupation is also one, and they tend to put themselves in a category with other people who they view as being special or brilliant. So this could be someone like that puts them in a category with like special or top-notch doctors or top-notch lawyers and things like that, because they view themselves as being in a category above others. And so they only want to associate with people that are in the upper category, and are superior.
This might not be an ethical question, but is there like a public figure who exists right now or in history that you would classify as a narcissist so that people could like latch on to that?
You know, again, it's, you know, those kind of questions I kind of shy away from for myself. But, you know, there's a lot of people that view, you know, people that are in charge of our country as being a narcissist. It's not my, you know, that's not my personal view in terms of diagnosing someone. But that has been thrown around a lot in terms of the grandiosity. I think, too, the hypocrisy is the other element. People that are narcissistic will often tend to judge people or put down people who have make poor decisions or do things which aren't socially inappropriate, but they'll do them themselves and they don't think that the rules apply.
When I was in grad school, and not saying, there's a disclaimer, not saying that this person is diagnosed as having narcissistic personality disorder, but when I was in grad school, and I think this was a case study or case conceptualization class, one assignment was to pick a public figure and demonstrate how they may fit the criteria of a diagnosis. And my paper was on O.J. Simpson and how he would fit the criteria of narcissistic personality disorder based on what's been seen in the media and his background and things like that. I got an A on that paper. But again, not to say that he has that disorder, because I am not qualified to diagnose him with that.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
How does someone come to be this way? Are you like born with narcissistic personality disorder, or is it acquired over time with like trauma or what?
You know, in my experience of working with personality disordered folks or folks who have personality disorders, and I've worked with quite a few, personality disorders typically develop out of trauma. And that's been my experience. And so with that specific personality disorder, narcissism, it's usually more common than not that a person with narcissistic personality disorder typically has one or both parents or caregivers that are also very narcissistic.
Just what you were saying earlier, you were kind of going over some of the traits, and obviously you can't diagnose the people in my life or anything like that. But like, and also like in my time reading up on narcissistic personality disorder, I would see like some things that would fit, but not everything would fit. So would you say that narcissism could be considered a spectrum?
It is definitely a spectrum. It's definitely a spectrum. And also more importantly, especially right now, it's a buzzword. And so what you're seeing now is that people are being characterized or classified as narcissistic or a narcissistic personality disorder, which it may or may not be the case, but, you know, but because it's extremely rare, it's probably not likely that they have narcissistic personality disorder, but rather what you're seeing is people who have narcissistic traits. So if you see people that are extremely manipulative, or you see people that lack empathy, or they're just kind of extremely uncaring or insensitive in their relationship, they're being classified as narcissistic when in all actuality, what they're possessing is narcissistic traits without having the full-blown diagnosis. And that happens pretty much with any personality disorder. There's a lot of people who possess traits without having the full disorder. And I also want to clarify, too, that with narcissism, we all possess narcissistic traits, right? Because a certain amount of narcissism, like feeling yourself or being arrogant or, you know, things like that, or feeling like you're the best at something, to a certain extent, it can be a healthy, and it can also be a coping mechanism for people. But it's usually when people are, or when it's at an extreme, or when it's causing a problem in a relationship, that it's usually viewed as problematic or characterological, if you will. But we all have a healthy amount of narcissism, so it definitely is on a spectrum.
Hmm. And so, like, these types of qualities can be healthy, but they can also cause issues within a relationship. So how would one spot a narcissist in, I guess, just in life, in someone who they might be courting or someone who is courting them? Like, what are the warning signs that someone might be a narcissist or possess some abusive or negative narcissistic qualities?
Sure, absolutely. And one thing that you have to realize with narcissists is that they're really into image and feeling good about themselves. So how that plays out in the relationships, these are some of the red flags that you would look for in a relationship. First of all, it's important to realize that most narcissistic people, when they start out in the relationship, that's considered the honeymoon period. And things look really good. And this person would fall into your life, and it seems like this person is too good to be true. I mean, they could be good looking. They're typically saying all the right things. They're doing all the right things. And they call this love bombing for a reason, because this person makes you feel very special. They make you feel on top of the world, like you're the most beautiful, or you're the most sensitive, or you're the most kind and smart person. So they're going out of their way to make you feel good and to make you fall in love with them or to commit to them. And it's usually at a quicker pace. That would be the one thing I will say, is that usually they want things very, very quickly. And so they're trying to get a buy-in or a commitment from you. That buy-in or that commitment could be that we're in a relationship. We could be having sex very early on. So you might even have sex with this person on the first date. We could move in, you know, very quickly. So now we're now living together, maybe after 2 weeks, a month or 2 months after dating each other. We become an exclusive item together. Maybe we've had a child together very early on in the relationship. Something to where you can get that commitment, or that, or they feel like they have your love and devotion from them. And it's usually done very quickly. And you're very bamboozled, and you can't pump the brakes. Like, they want to see you commit to them. And also, too, there's something in which the tide turns and it changes. And as quickly as they fell in love with you, they can fall out. So there may be, the way they can do this is by ghosting. Ghosting is kind of where they disappear. Like, you know, you might even think things are going good, or maybe you even had an argument and your partner disappears from you. They have no contact with you, and you don't even understand why or what happened. But most importantly, they cease all communication with you, and you can't get in touch with them until they're ready to get in touch with you. There's no real clear-cut termination there. So it's not like the two of you broke up, or you definitively parted ways. So therefore, they have what I like to call the foot in the door approach, They want to make sure that they can come back in at any time, and they usually use a lame excuse for this. So, you know, it could be something like, oh, I just thought that you didn't want to talk to me or anything like that. And then there's also other manipulative tactics that they can use to maintain control of the relationship. Manipulative tactics such as gaslighting is what's very common in relationships with narcissistic people. And gaslighting entails a number of different techniques. So what happens is sometimes you might get into an argument or want to discuss problems that come up in a relationship with this narcissistic person, and they tend to be having a totally different conversation. So that means that they can, they are like intellectualizing the conversation. So they're making the conversation about intelligence, or they might be fact checking, like they might want specific data and be focused more on date and times and what you did or said. And so they're focusing on nitpicking and not really focusing on the issue at hand. Or they could take your words and then twist it around on you, right? They tend to twist things around. And so, for example, if you saw your partner cheating or doing something that they weren't supposed to do, you bring this up to them. They say, well, you know, had you cooked, have you been cooking and taking care of things at home, we wouldn't be here. So you're actually failing the relationships, or you're the reason why I had to go elsewhere. Or they could totally deny and deflect altogether and basically try to convince you that you're crazy, which is the crux of gaslighting, is that psychologically they're manipulating you and trying to convince you that you're crazy. So I think, you know, one thing that comes to mind to prove this is like, Shaggy had a song that it wasn't me.
No, yeah. That cool was my just first about that. Introduction to gaslighting. And every time I hear that song, my blood boils because it's like, you're not going to make me seem crazy. Oh my God.
That song, It Wasn't Me, is like a perfect example of gaslighting. Like she saw everything and he's like, it wasn't me. You know, it wasn't, he's just like, nah, it wasn't me. Like you didn't see that. The other piece too, in another component of gaslighting that people will try to do, narcissistic or people with narcissistic traits will try to do, is they'll try to bring in reinforcements. To convince you that you are not of a sound mind or perspective. So this might be like, this might look like someone reaching out to their friends or reaching out to their parents to then contact you and tell you that your feelings or that your experiences weren't valid or that you're crazy or things like that. So those would be some things that you might see as well.
Would that also take the form of like them having friends or family members call or like reach you and say things like, you know, when guys, I'm talking to Sam, you know, when guys, you know, their friends are like, oh, I never see him act like that with a girl, or, yeah, you know, he really loves you, or yeah, like all these information I didn't ask for.
Yeah.
those are character witnesses, right? And those people are there. They're there for their benefit. And they're also there to paint a picture that your perspective is wrong. What you experienced was wrong. And this person obviously couldn't do this because I know them to be a stand-up guy or stand-up girl. So that's what those people are there for. And I'll also tell you this too, about red flags with narcissistic people is the proof is in the pudding, and the pudding is often in relationships, and that relationship is usually the hallmark trait of people with personality disorders or people that are on the personality disorder spectrum or have strong personality disorder traits. And specifically with narcissistic personality disorder, I like to couch it or coin it as either the white knight or the victim. In their relationships. Wow. So the relationships are often very short-lived and very chaotic. Or if they keep people around, they're specifically for manipulative purposes only, and they don't have a deeper relationship with people, but they're there for their own personal gain. And when someone is a white knight or the victim, I think those roles are very, very self-explanatory. So they either view themselves as coming in and saving someone or being the victim by someone. So what this looks like, if you're like the white knight, or if you're with someone who is the white knight, they could be someone that says, you know, I had to save my baby mama. You know, I did all this and this and this for her. I paid all the bills. I basically raised the children by myself. I worked three jobs and I held it down. And it's not to say that people can't do that. People can't don't do those things. But when it's a pattern of that extends across relationships, like I'm constantly saving the day, I'm constantly the hero across the board in all relationships, that's when you really want to start thinking about, okay, this, there's something seriously wrong. Or when a person is saying that they're a victim, like everybody I've been with has cheated on me and treated me like a bad guy or a bad woman, and people just have just basically crapped on me and used me, and I've constantly tried to, you know, do my best, and, you know, there are no good people out there. You know, and it's kind of like a woe is me in every single relationship, and they're constantly being the victim. That's when you want to start looking and considering maybe there's some personality traits there.
So we're going to get more into your podcast in a little bit, but I wanted to talk about the fact that your cover art for your podcast is like a skeleton man who's dating a woman. And I'm assuming the skeleton is like the narcissist and the woman is the woman. And then just listening to all of this, it's triggering several encounters that I've had with men in my life, specifically with romantic partners. Well, romantic partners, bosses, business associates, just like there's a lot of men. So I'm wondering, like, not to be the Men Are Trash podcast or anything like that, even though we are on other episodes, is there a are there like socioeconomic factors that make certain people more perceptible to becoming narcissists?
Is there a gender not bias or like
skew?
So there is, I mean, in terms of, you know, more likely to, research right now, interestingly enough, supports that more men are narcissistic or fall on the narcissistic spectrum. However, it's interesting in that respect because more of the literature has been written about female narcissists. So that's very interesting, specifically around narcissistic mothers. And what I will say, and I find that interesting because, and I find that also to be a gender bias, because I think women, I'll say this, and it could show up on both roles actually, but I think that as women, specifically mothers are supposed to be nurturing and caring and all of this kind of things. And so when mothers are not, there's more of a backlash towards that. And I think for the longest time, men have been portrayed as being, oh, he's just a man. Or that's just what a man does, or that's just how you have to cater to men. So I do think it's been couched that way. So I'm wondering about the research and the numbers, because there's a lot of things that have just kind of been explained away in terms of men are supposed to be aggressive, men are supposed to be arrogant. And oh, if a man is sleeping with another woman, or he has multiple relationships, or he has babies with different women or things like that, I think sad to say, I do think socially that's been more acceptable. And so it hasn't really been looked at as closely, if you will, until now. I think more people are starting to really kind of catch on. But women usually get most of the backlash. In terms of socioeconomics, too, I do think, you know, and I, again, I don't know, but I do think a lot of things have become more, I don't know if acceptable is the word, but just kind of one of those things that hasn't been really looked at as closely. So for example, there's a lot of single parent homes, right? And I think, again, there's that with a certain culture, specifically with African American culture, and I'm not saying that this happens across the board with African Americans, but what I am saying is that there's somewhat of an acceptance around that, or having a single parent home. But that needs to be looked at, because I do think, again, with relationship inconsistency, meaning when people leave, or they can't be relied upon as a stable caregiver, that there should be some consideration there for maybe there are some narcissistic traits going on there, but that I don't know that that's been looked at as closely. There have also, I did recently do a podcast with one of my good friends, and he talked about Black gay men and how sexual identity, or the lack of being able to express sexual identity and masculinity, can also lead to those feelings of inferiority, but also trying to come across as you're more superior.
This is a segue back into just the basic behaviors of a narcissist, but you say that they lack empathy. Are they ever capable of empathy? Like, do they completely lack empathy? And also, are they capable of actual love in whatever way you would define love, I guess?
Again, I think this comes back to the whole spectrum thing. Someone who is on the more severe, moderate to severe range, that answer is going to be no. And I think, too, when you're thinking about this personality disorder specifically, you are talking about people that don't think that they have a problem. So these people are going to look at you as being the problem, if that makes sense. They're not going to really consider themselves as having a problem. So therefore, it's because you aren't good enough and you aren't doing what you're supposed to do. I think, and the other piece of it, too, when you have someone that's on the mild up to the, you know, midway between the moderate range of the traits, you have to start looking at motivation to change. So how likely is this person motivated? What kind of insight do they have? Because you have some people that are so grandiose that think that they're above others, and they're not willing to be introspective, that they don't have that capability to have that insight that something is wrong. There is research that suggests that people with narcissistic traits can display empathy. They just choose not to, because they don't feel like it's an emotion that serves them.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Jeez. Are there certain kinds of people who narcissists usually prey on?
Absolutely. People that are not narcissistic.
Oh, my God. So they're just casting a really wide net.
Yeah, they typically tend to go after people that are very empathetic, that are very sensitive people, nurturers, if you will. You will not find a narcissist with another narcissist. That's not going to be a purpose that serves them. They want someone who they can utilize, who they can manipulate, have control over. And that's just not going to happen with another narcissistic person. Yeah. So, you know, what that person is going to look like, typically when you have someone that's with a narcissistic person, they may be very kind. They're going to be very kind. They're going to be very caring. They're going to be empathetic. So they're going to want to help people out a lot. Right. And they're going to care about helping people more than they care about helping themselves. Right? These people can be manipulated. And typically speaking, the depends on the range of the narcissistic traits. But these are going to be people that they can manipulate very easily because those are the people who that they can benefit from having in their life. Right. And this can be in a variety of different ways, depending on what the needs are. These can be financially, this can be physically, this can be sexually, this can be emotionally. It just really depends on what they feel like the needs are. It could be all of the above, depending on the person, you know, and it's actually not quite uncommon to have a following, right? I think you know, if you want to talk about other people that are pretty grand on the narcissistic scale, I think some of them might be cult leaders. People are always like, how do cult leaders get this following? It's typically because they have people that are very gullible. And I also will say the other hallmark of being a favorite target by a narcissist is people that are also in isolation. So people that don't feel like they have a lot of support or they're not connected with friends and family are also very easily attainable by narcissists, because one of the ways in which they draw you in is they make you feel loved and cared for and like you're the most wonderful person immediately. And so those are people that are isolated or don't have a huge support system that are very easily drawn into that.
So in theory, they might even target someone who's in like a particular spot in life, like let's say someone who like just lost their whole family in a fire or something like that, or someone who's like recently out of a breakup.
Yeah, absolutely. People that have lost everything and they're emotionally, they're raw or they're very distraught. People who have very low self-esteem, people that have been outcast or ostracized from their family. They may feel like the ugly duckling or the black sheep. So they might not feel like they have anyone. People who are forgotten about. So this could be people that are in the prison system. This could be people, elderly people that are in the nursing home, or people that are disabled, or people that have some severe mental illness even, or even not even severe. But I think you get the gist of what I'm saying. So these are people that are often kind of alone, or people that just, you hear it all the time, people that just don't like people. Right. They don't have a big social network. So this could be just your random coworker that doesn't really like going out. They have social anxiety, or they just, you know, for whatever reason, don't like being around other people. So they might be at home on the computer. They might be watching TV, or they just might spend a lot of time alone. These would also be people that are susceptible to that.
They are just preying on the vulnerable.
On the vulnerable, on the marginalized.
Yeah. Is it also a narcissistic quality that like narcissists will kind of build you up and say that you're not like other people and kind of like welcome you into their club of greatness and then kind of like take it all away? Is that a trait of narcissism?
Absolutely. I mean, and that's kind of what cult leaders do, right? And one, and again, I'm not diagnosing, but I think that's kind of where, you know, when we start looking at people who do things like that, right? Like, for one person that's coming to mind is like Jim Jones, right? Jim Jones right here from the Bay Area. He took a mass following of people to Guyana. Like they're in the middle of a jungle with nothing. And they gave I mean, these people sold their houses and gave all their money to him, you know, and he's telling them they're on a religious path, that annihilation and all these other things are coming soon, and that they have to prepare themselves for this mass suicide, and that they're going to be the ones that save themselves. Again, another person, Charles Manson might be another one. He's, you know, taking these people, they're building these things underground. They're going to be the ones saved when the race war starts. So black people are going to start killing everybody. Right. So that's, you know, if you think of it, but people bought into that. And I mean, he even got them to take out other people, but because, you know, they bought into that and they fell into that. But that happens too. And also too, with just your average ordinary person. Right. If they're being love bombed by somebody that's narcissistic, a lot of the ways in which that works, and if they're not 100% isolated, but a narcissistic person will want to continue to have them isolate themselves from friends and family that do care about them. One of the ways in which that works is that they will tell that person, hey, they're jealous of you. They're jealous of what we have. They're jealous of what we have, and that's why they're talking down about us or talking down about you. You know what you need to do? You need to cut that person off, right? And they'll continue to plant those seeds so that you can continue to cut yourself off from people out there like that.
And so is there any... If you find yourself in a relationship with a narcissist, is there any reform, or like what should you do? Should you find yourself in that situation?
It depends on where you are, because just like narcissism falls on a spectrum, where you're at in a relationship falls on a spectrum, right? Because there are some people, and there's a lot of different factors that kind of go into it, right? You have people that, especially if they've been made to feel like this is the best that they're ever going to get, they may not be willing to leave that. They may not be willing to leave that relationship if we have children together, if we're married, you know. So it really depends on what that person wants and which stage they're at in their relationship. If you're at a stage where you feel like maybe you're not wanting to leave this relationship, because a lot of the people that come to see me as a therapist, when they come to see me and they're in relationships with these people, they're not saying to me, hey, I'm in a relationship with a narcissist. What they're saying is, I feel anxious. I feel depressed. I feel like I have a relationship issue or a communication issue, and I want to save my relationship. I want to see what's wrong with me, right? Because I'm trying to make myself better for my relationship. I want to save my relationship. I want to cater to my partner more, or whatever it is that they're wanting to do. But that's usually the overall overarching premises of how they couch that. They just know that they're feeling anxious because there's some kind of issue in which they know that their needs aren't getting met, but they're more concerned about how they can save what they've got going on. Right. And that's the reason why you can't, or you, I won't say you can't, but I will say you probably shouldn't tell people that they're in a relationship with a narcissist, because they're not going to be ready to hear that until they're ready to hear that, if that makes sense.
So that comes with like time and more therapy?
It comes with time and therapy, but more importantly, it comes with insight. Because, you know, and that's why I say it depends on where they're at in the spectrum, because usually when you're having, or when you have a problem in your relationship, people don't have the amount of insight and awareness to be able to understand the full scope of their problem. What they know in the beginning is that it doesn't feel good. The other piece of that too, you know, in terms of what should you do if you're in a relationship with a narcissist, especially if you're wanting to leave, it depends on what you're working with here. you know, because, and what I mean when I say that is because it can be a safety and security issue. Depending on the type of person that you're with, they're not going to let you just walk up out of that relationship if they're not ready to let you go. You don't leave that relationship until they tell you to leave that relationship, is how a lot of them think. And so it may not be as easy as kind of picking up your stuff and going. What I would say, if you're in a relationship like that where safety and security is an issue, or even if safety and security isn't an issue and you just feel uneasy about walking out the door, I would say talk to a therapist about that. Talk to a therapist no matter where you're at on the spectrum. I think that could be good just to have an objective person. But usually if you're feeling uneasy, there's a good chance that, you know, it's not going to be easy to leave this relationship. And people will do a lot of things if they feel like they're losing control of the relationship and or you before they're ready to. You could see an entirely different person come out, and you often do see these types of people come out. And usually when you do, they're on the news, they're on our favorite forensic shows and things like that. So although you may not have seen any sort of violence, it doesn't mean that that person won't react out or won't try to sabotage you in some way. So those would be things. Just definitely talking about people, talking about it with a therapist is one way. I also think too, the relationship itself loses more power or control over you the more you stay connected with other people, because that's one of the ways in which they maintain control over you, is by isolating you from others. And I mean, if you think about it on your basic level, you know, if you're watching Animal Planet, you know, the animals that get gobbled up first are the ones that are by themselves and that are weak and vulnerable. So, you know, on the most basic level, stay with your tribe, you know, or stay connected to several people, you know, and have that deeper relationship and be open and willing to listen to people who care about you. But definitely just do that. And then, you know, too, listening to shows like this, reading, Google is great. Amazon is great. There's a lot of self-help stuff. And so even if you don't know, per se, like I said, that you're, whether or not you're in a relationship with a narcissistic person, there's a lot of self-help stuff out there. And sooner or later, if you continue with the symptomology, you're going to come up with what the actual problem is. So just staying well read. The other thing too, you know, especially if you're a victim of gaslighting and you doubt yourself, you doubt your sanity, try to document what's happening and do it. Keep your stuff squared away in a safe place. So just try to keep a record of things that are going on. That's always a good thing to do. And lastly, one of the other things that I'll mention too, is, and this can get pretty difficult, because what tends to happen are that children and other family members get caught up. Try not to let family members get caught up in the mix. So definitely enforce more boundaries. And again, I do think that can come with therapy, but, you know, don't let other people kind of bleed into your relationship and try to sway it one way or the other. Just try to keep your relationship. And also, and this is the other last piece that I'll say, and these are just tips. This is not the end all be all. And of course, every case is different, so I'll preface that there, is once you've made a decision, stick to it and act on that. What tends to happen a lot of times, especially with people without support, is that they'll make a decision about the relationship and they'll kind of go back and forth, and then there'll be a lot of mixed messages, and then we'll get caught up in turmoil, and then this thing will start over again. So again, I do think that this will help with therapy. So if, what I mean when I say that is if you did make a decision to end the relationship, like stick a fork in you, you were done. Stick with that and act accordingly. And that would look like cutting off relationship. If you've got kids together, when you do have contact, just keep it professional and talk about the kids only and not about your feelings. So really work on keeping yourself in check and sticking to what your goals are.
You had mentioned earlier to like keep in touch with your tribe and not to get too isolated. Let's say you're a member of the tribe and you see one of your friends or family members who is entering into a relationship with a narcissist or anything like that. What are some ways to support that person?
This can be kind of tricky, right? Because this kind of goes back to that whole thing, like where people are at. But if you love somebody, you can approach it that way. The easiest and best way that I say to approach it is say it lovingly and say, hey, you know, I see the type of relationship that you're in. And I'm concerned for you because I love you. And these are the reasons why I am concerned for you. Right. And you can list off whatever those reasons are. And what I would suggest doing is letting that person know I'm not here to judge you, because most people, they react and they defend when they feel like they're being judged. You can say, I'm not here to judge you, but I want to let you know that I'm here for you. So if you need anything, and only offer what you can give. And by that, what I mean by that is saying, like, if you need me, like, if you want to talk, I'm here for you to talk. If it's a situation that's much more dire and you're offering that person a place to stay, don't offer it unless you're able to give it. But, you know, just let them know that you can be there to support them and how you can be there to support them, and let them know that you're not going to judge them. And that you still care for them regardless. If you want to offer them resources, like, hey, you know, I'm just going to put this out there and let them know that they could take it or leave it, and that there's no judgment attached to that, then, hey, just offer them stuff like, oh, I heard this podcast, or I read this book and I thought you could really benefit from it, or, you know, whatever. Or, hey, I know this great therapist. If you want, I can give you the number and you could take it or leave it. But I would just do it. I think the best way to do it is to, one, show your concern, and two, to do it without judgment. Because people don't want to go, or they don't want to confide, even when they're doing bad. They don't want to confide or ask you for help if they feel like they're going to be judged, or they're going to be shut down, or they're going to be told, I told you so, or you're stupid, or anything like that. People will stay in a bad situation because of pride. And if your intentions are good, you just want to let them know that you're not going to judge them, and that their problem is their problem, but you're there to support them. So you don't want to enable them. You don't want to get caught up in their mess. You know, and I think that's important to keep an objective stance, because a lot of times what we'll do is we'll get caught up, right? And they may use you or say, hey, I need you one second, and tell you all this stuff, and then go back into that relationship. And then you're feeling angry with them because now you've done all this and that to help them. So just try to be objective. Don't get overly enmeshed with what they've got going on. And then, you know, move on.
Mm-hmm. These are really great tips, not just for a relationship with a narcissist, but all abusive and toxic relationships, mm-hmm. as the best ways that any tribe member, any supporter, any friend can kind of approach a situation.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned earlier that the folks who come to your practice in need of advice don't say things like, I'm in a relationship with a narcissist, but I'm feeling like anxious and depressed. What are some, obviously, so I'm assuming those are some symptoms that can display as someone is in a relationship with a narcissist or has ended a relationship with a narcissist? What are some other kinds of things that can arise?
When I think the biggest thing is it's definitely going to be psychological abuse. And psychological abuse is going to look like, hey, I cannot talk to my partner about our problems in our relationship. Like, I have to walk on eggshells around my partner because it turns into a situation when I try to bring up problems or make suggestions. So I think that's one way. I think the other thing, too, is when you feel like you don't have any control over decisions or communication or just, you know, a lot of major things happen. And that could be, again, that could be finances, that could be sex, that could be emotions, that could be anything. The other thing too is when you don't know where you stand in your relationship. There's a lot of women out there that, you know, that I work with, professional women that don't know where they stand in their relationship. So, for example, what that looks like is, hey, I want to get married, or hey, I'm ready to take our relationship to the next level, but your partner isn't. And they're not communicating with you why. And this goes back to problem solving. They're not communicating with you why, and they're not willing to even entertain your goals and things like that. So they're not willing to do that. And I think too, you know, just that might come across as women, you know, and I'm speaking about women, but this can happen too with men, but women that are envious of their friends. Hey, my friends are all getting married. Hey, my friends are all having children and they're starting their families. And I've been with this guy 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years, and our relationship is stagnant, right? And so I think that's another reason. Also, too, finances. There's a few different things around finances, but I'll talk about a couple here. If your partner doesn't financially contribute, right? So they're kind of living off of you, so to speak, and that's not an arrangement that you're okay with, but for whatever reason, they feel like work is beneath them or it's not something that they're willing to explore and that you have to take on the financial responsibilities, right? Or if they have money, their money is their money and your money is their money too, right? So they have control over the finances, or they are sucking you dry and they are ruining your credit and they don't care that they're ruining your credit. So I think that's another big sign there of them wanting to take control. And in terms of sex, sex is another big thing, especially with women, especially with African-American women, because there's a lot of women that are sexually having sex with men and they're feeling like, okay, I'm satisfied as long as he's satisfied. It doesn't matter that my needs are not being met. And, you know, with their partner is not concerned at all with what their needs are. So they're not concerned. They're just there. I mean, honestly, you're just there to get me off, especially. So if your partner has no concerns about your sexual health, your sexual well-being, you guys can't talk about boundaries and sex, or your partner pushes a boundary in sex that's not okay with you, and you guys can't talk about it. So, for example, that might look like someone taking off a condom or not using a condom, and that wasn't okay, and that wasn't discussed with you. Or that might look like them having other sexual relationships outside of yours when you guys agreed upon monogamy, and them not being more nonchalant about it or not caring about it. It could be something like bringing home an STD and giving it to you and just, again, not willing to talk about it or being uncaring and cold about that. And that stuff happens quite a bit. And it, you know, it makes women question themselves. And if you're more or less, the women that I've worked with are more or less questioning, what did they do? How can they be better? You know, and then two, your partner is unwilling to look at the problems together. So they're saying that you are the problem, not them, and that you need to go to therapy or you are crazy. You know, and you are the blame for everything, and not, they have no responsibilities whatsoever because you're just an awful person. That's another indicator that women are, you know, the women that I've worked with are being faced with, is that they're being told that they're doing this. Other things that women might do, that I work with, they try to overcompensate for what they're not getting in the relationship, right? So they're not getting any sort of emotional validation from their partner. They're not getting any feelings of specialness or, you know, or anything, because usually by the time they come to see me, things are bad. They're not going good anymore. And so what they'll try to do is they might try to reach out and have an affair with somebody else, or they will engage in drinking or using drugs to help them benefit for them, not help them compensate for not getting their needs met emotionally. So I do see a bit of that. Or working a lot. People throw themselves in their work and they try to become overachievers because work looks good, right? People don't think of work as being a problem because it looks good. You're getting paid for it. You're considered to be successful. But at the end of the day, that's all you have is your job. So those could be some additional signs and symptoms. And typically what's going on with these women is these women are internalizing and they're trying to focus on themselves and make themselves a problem. And one of the other things that I will say is that a lot of women that are struggling within their relationship is that they're focused on the end goal of the relationship. So they're so focused on getting married. They're so focused on having a child, or they're so focused on some sort of script, right? Or some sort of narrative in their mind that they're not a failure in any way, right? So they're focused on that end goal, but they're not focused on the steps in between. So they're just so focused on how can I make this narrative in my mind come true? They're not focusing on how that person is doing everything to not make that narrative true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, when you were talking about the sex element, me and Akua were in the studio kind of like shaking our heads furiously or nodding our heads furiously. And I just, this is like a cultural commentary for me that's like unfounded, but I think one of the reasons why narcissism is such a buzzword right now is because so many facets of narcissism fit into what toxic masculinity is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like we're just pulling that out and just saying like, oh, well, all men are narcissists, although they might not be. But there's like these traits that like, I guess, are encouraged, like the condom thing has happened to me on more than one occasion, and the not caring about
my sexual health, my sexual needs, my sexual pleasure. These are things that many women talk about, regardless, or, you know, if their partner is a narcissist or not. This is a trend within our current sexual culture.
Absolutely. And it's happening all the time. It's been going on for a long time. And that's kind of what I meant when I say, when I said, I think, you know, a lot of things has been coined as that's just the way men are. You know, that kind of took away that narrative for such a long time. And we're in a great era in that people are starting to recognize things a lot more and looking at it for what it is. But we're also in a very politically charged era. So I don't know that people are getting the full grasp of why things are the way that they are, but that it just sounds good, or, you know, kind of like the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. You know, I think certain things, the R. Kelly documentary, and now they're doing the ball players documentary about ball players that have abused their wives. Although these things are great and there's been a lot of recognition brought to it, I think it's being brought for the wrong reasons and people don't fully get the scope of why it's wrong or why these things are coming out now. It just seems like things take on a political meaning. And again, it's not to say that it's still not helpful, but I think, you know, the way things have been coined, we've just gotten away from the real underlying issue.
Mm-hmm. What would you say? So if a person chooses to remain in a relationship with a narcissist because there are all these factors that might lead to why someone might not be able to end the relationship, or if someone does choose to end the relationship and actually can end the relationship, what are some like common coping mechanisms for dealing with it? Because obviously the situation can get very abusive. So how does one protect themselves or protect their mental health during or after the fact?
You know, even if someone wants to stay in a relationship, one of the things that we can do, and going back to like what I was talking to you about before, is we can start focusing on them and how they feel. And one of the ways in which I like to do that is I like to help women feel empowered. So show them the ways at which they are successful and which they are smart. And also, you know, this happens even if they do leave the relationship. People, one of the ways in which being in a relationship with a narcissistic partner works is that people feel victimized. They feel used, they feel abused, and like they can't make it or they can't do it without that other person. So just reinforcing the fact that you can and that your situation in your relationship has nothing to do with how smart you are. Because I've worked with some really intelligent people that have been in some just, you know, some seriously toxic relationship. And on a intelligence level, these people are able to know that. And they may even be counseling or coaching other people that are in a similar type of relationship. Is that your brain is wired for trauma. So definitely educating people on how their brains and their spirit has been wired to be with trauma, or just educating around that by discussing early relationships and empowering them and letting them know that, yes, you do have the right to make a decision, and your decision to stay is your decision. And, you know, kind of validating their feelings, but also making them feel like they can make their feelings without feeling ashamed, without feeling guilty or inferior. You know, that is your decision, and you don't need to defend that. You don't need to defend yourself, that kind of thing. So definitely doing that, again, by reintroducing them to their support or reminding them of their support. So if they have family or if they have friends and things like that, just reminding them that, you know, hey, these people are there for you, and that can provide that balance. In addition to other areas in which you can provide balance, work-life play that balance. So doing things in which I'm helping them reintroduce self-care, ways that they can take care of themselves when they feel emotionally depleted, physically depleted, or other ways in which they feel depleted. So working on a regular self-care routine. And yeah, those would be a few ways in which I would do that. And then also just educating them on being mindful. So being mindful is being aware of what's happening within you. So there are some questions that you should ask yourself when you're experiencing emotional discomfort or just even physical discomfort, because there's a lot of people that when they're in something that's traumatic, they'll detach from their emotions and they'll just feel it physically, because your body is going to keep the score. So they might feel chest tightness. They might feel like they can't breathe or whatever. And so part of that would be like practicing mindfulness every day, like just be in touch with what's going on with you and what's going on with your body when you're feeling these symptoms. What's going on? What are you feeling? Why am I feeling that right now? What's triggering that? And how is that causing me to behave? Okay, and what do I need to sort of remedy this situation right now? Do I need to kind of step away for 5 minutes? Do I need to just kind of come back and address how I feel at a later time? You know, what are some tips that I can sort of do that to keep me present in the here and now and focus on what I'm feeling? Because what I'm feeling is also equally important. And I want to be able to make sure that I'm able to take care of myself and I'm not pushing myself beyond a limit.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Those seem like great coping mechanisms. I wanted to turn back to what we've alluded to throughout the interview, and that is your podcast. So you host and produce a podcast called A Date with Darkness, which is specifically dedicated to those who have been hurt by love and abuse through their relationships with narcissistic people. So what led you to starting this show?
Oh, that's a good question. There were a few different things. When I started my podcast, which I'm sure you guys know, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford from Therapy for Black Girls.
Yes.
Therapy for Black Girls. And then it was me, it was Dr. Janae Taylor and Vina Wilson. We were in a Black therapist circle and we were all starting a podcast. And I was like, oh, okay, I was in private practice at the time and I was thinking about ways to kind of grow my practice, you know, and we were all in a podcast mastermind together. So we thought, hey, let's get together and do this podcast sisterhood thing. And we'll kind of help each other along the way and kind of boost each other and this and that. So I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, I just want to, I want this podcast to be an extension of my practice, to be an extension of the women that I work with. The podcast is also an extension of myself, right, as well as my clientele, because these are things that I went through personally, professionally. These are things that I've researched. This is, you know, I've worked with both ends of the spectrum. So I've worked with narcissistic and antisocial personality disorder, histrionic and borderline personality disorder, as well as I've worked with people, and I still do, as well as working with people who are victims or people who've experienced this or who've gotten caught up in some very toxic relationships. So I said, well, you know, let me just speak on this. This is something I'm passionate about. And I did it like that. I didn't really expect anything from it except to maybe generate more clients, I think is what I thought in the beginning.
And what has your experience been with it so far? Like, what kind of feedback do you get from your listeners?
So, you know, I get, you know, when you start a podcast, as I'm sure you guys know, it really does take on a life of its own. You know, and then it also, too, it becomes like this thing. You know, a podcast is like another job. And I don't think I really knew that going into it. I was just like, oh, okay, let me just do this thing. And, you know, it's going to be, I'm just going to record and I'm going to release this thing. No, there's editing that goes involved. There's finding people that can be interviewed, because not everybody is a good interviewee, you know? Yeah. So all interviews aren't good. So there's editing, there's having to let people know that, hey, I'm going to have to trash your interview because it just wasn't good. And people don't usually take that well. So now I'm putting out a form that has a disclaimer, but there's just, you know, and then people email you questions, right? They want questions. They want to tell you their stories. I mean, I've gotten emails that are like 30 pages long, you know, where people are wanting to tell me their story. And it's great. I love it. I do. And then, you know, I get stuff like this, you know, so you guys just interview. I get I got reached out to be on TV, you know, writing opportunities and things like that. And then just like, you know, my colleagues are like, whoa, your podcast is really good. I refer my clients to it because I don't know and you're helping them. And then we could talk about it in the session. You know, my mom and my sister and them listen to it now. So they're like, oh, wow, we didn't know you was doing stuff like that. That's pretty cool. And I'm learning from it. So it's like, you know, it's really turning, you know, and then it became very personal to me, you know, and I just kind of go along. And so I've really put a lot of love and care into it now, whereas before I didn't. And so now I have to, it's now become also an expense. So now I have to hire people to help me out. I now have like, what do I have? I have an assistant. I have three editors. I have all, you know, so I have all this stuff. Now I'm putting this stuff on YouTube. So now I'm going to have a video channel for the podcast, and it's just growing and growing and growing. And it's a blessing and it can be a curse at the same time, because it's like, oh, it really turns into this thing and it takes on a life of its own. But I'm happy nonetheless. I'm happy that I'm helping somebody, because I didn't really think anybody would listen to it. You know, maybe like one or two people. But it seems like I have a little bit of a following. So it's like a small show that I put into a lot of love and care into. And not to mention, I've met like some really great people. Like I've had some really good interviews. Like I interviewed a professional cuddler. Like that's crazy. Like I didn't even know something like that existed, yeah, you know, personal interview. So like I interviewed Charlie. Her mother left her and didn't come back. I interviewed a guy that was a sex offender and he talked about his stuff. Yeah. So there's been a lot of interviews that have really stopped and made me think. I even recently did an interview, which was, I think my most difficult interview, which is surprising, with Dr. Carmen Roman. And the interview, why I'm so surprised by that is the basis of her interview that she used was my own blog post. And so emotionally, that interview was the most challenging for me, because it was like really triggering for me. And I'm like, well, damn, all she's doing is reiterating back my own blog, like the words that I've written. So I feel like I can't do that anymore. Like my own words move me way too much. That's not to be narcissistic in my own way. It's just that I didn't realize it would be that difficult to me. I mean, it was a beautiful interview. It was my gift to you, to the public, but it was also the most difficult one I've ever had to do.
You have done such expansive, insightful, incredible work, and we're like super proud of your success. This is amazing. Yeah, it's like it's a niche topic, but I think it, like, one, with narcissism being a buzzword, it's something that people are at least curious about. And then also for folks who are going through it, it's like an incredible resource.
Absolutely. And you know, it's my show, too, is definitely geared toward people of color. There are elements in our culture, and I get people who are people of color, that kind of stuff. There's just elements that people of color are going to get that you're not going to get in other cultures. So, you know, an element of that would be colorism. I think colorism is very narcissistic, right? When you're talking about texturism, body features, even when you're talking about narcissism and Black gay men, just how society emasculates Black men, you're just not going to get that in other cultures. And so a lot of that I have tried to focus on ours, and there's still so much content that I have, you know, and I'm constantly coming up with creative ideas and things, but still so many ways in which I think that it speaks to people of color, specifically Black women of color, because that's who I most relate to, that it just doesn't get addressed anywhere else. And it's not on the surface, it may be something that you've never even thought about, but it exists. I mean, because there are ways in which society as a whole is narcissistic and has been narcissistic towards Black women, and even Black women, Black men and Black families and things like that. I mean, if you even just look at this college scandal, that just happened. You know, people are like, oh, you know, people were a long time crying about affirmative action and how, you know, they let 10 to 20% of Black people take those spots. Well, now you're not worried about Black people, are you? You're looking at how your own people paid to take those slots from you. But this is just the type of stuff that we've had to deal with as a culture that kind of kept us down. So I've definitely tried to focus on that. I've researched it. I did my own research study on Black women who were psychologically abused by their mothers or by their parents while growing up, and how that affects women of color going through their life, going through their adulthood. And I came up with a lot of that. So I also feel like my dissertation study was also an inspiration for the podcast as well.
This is so amazing. This is so amazing. Well, it's been lovely. It's been a lovely hour and a half with you, Doctor.
Yes. Thank you so much. This is a topic Sam has wanted to cover since I met her in the fourth grade.
Long history with narcissists.
I appreciate you guys having me up here. I'm so grateful for the opportunity. I hope that the interview went well. I hope that your listeners love it and that I didn't tick people off.
We hope you did tick people off.
Yeah. Please let us know where everyone can listen to your podcast and engage with you on the internet.
Absolutely. So the best place to go is drnataliejones.com or adatewithdarkness.com. And I can definitely send you guys that. All my information is on my website. All of my podcast episodes are now officially up on my website. I'm getting the YouTube channel going. So all of that kind of good stuff, and how you can connect with me, you can email me and all that kind of good stuff through my website as well.
And if someone is looking to be a client of yours, they can go to your website as well?
Absolutely. Yep. www.drnataliejones.com. Mm-hmm.
Do you do distance counseling?
You know, I do. In the state of California, I do counseling across the state of California. However, they have a mandate that they don't like you to do counseling outside of California. So occasionally... Yeah. And I think that's pretty much the case for most states, but I do coaching. I do coaching in other states. I'm going to be getting a coaching program going here in a little bit. And then the thing too, is I'm thinking that I'm probably within the next few months, probably going to be licensed in Chicago and North Carolina as well, because those are home states for me. And I do want to open practices in those areas. Just so I can kind of, you know, move around a little bit. So definitely you'll see more of me.
Ooh, I can't wait.
Thank you so
That's
much.
Incredible. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
That was an amazing interview.
It was
a good end to Mental Health March.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel very accomplished that I could have made that happen
for you.
You
did a thing.
That was like, Samantha wants to talk about narcissism. So somebody go come up in this bitch and talk about narcissism.
Behind the scenes in that is that I really wanted to talk about that. Because I was triggered by something that happened to us with the man.
That happens all the time?
It does happen all the time. But the thing that really set it off was our encounter with that man. Mm-hmm. And then I was... That kind of like set me into like a little mini depression. I was like in bed for mad long after that. Like I was really affected. And I think during that time, I was just like, what makes me happy? Ah, yes, YouTube. And then I fell into like a niche of mental health videos on YouTube and specifically narcissistic videos or videos about narcissism. Yeah. And BPD. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yay. What I did wanted to say is that a lot of Dr. Jones's discussion highlighted traits that are present in all abusive and toxic relationships.
Yes.
So like gaslighting, manipulative, psychological abuse, emotional abuse.
Yeah.
What hallmarks being in a relationship with a narcissistic person is that grandiose
sense of self.
Sense of self. Gotcha. You know, that arrogance.
it's like a grandiose strive for success at anyone's expense. Ooh. At yours, his mama's, everybody. So
they don't care, y'all. They don't care.
So that will hallmark that. Plus, you know, all the gaslighting, manipulative tactics, abuse equals a relationship with a narcissistic person. That's, you know, that's the distinction. Because you could listen to that and hear, you know,
every nigga you've ever dated.
Yeah. And, you know, that don't mean every nigga was a narcissist. Because remember, Dr. Jones said it's 1-2% of people.
Yeah. So it can't be all of them.
So it ain't all of them.
Can't possibly be you all know, of them. But it feels like it, though.
Yeah. But it feels like it.
Like OD.
You know, so if you find yourself in these abusive relationships, but there isn't that piece of that inflated self of sense of self, because like even love bombing is something I've come in contact with people who aren't narcissistic, but just an abusive.
Yeah, that's an abusive trait. Yeah.
Relationship. Like they will just flood you in the beginning with all this love. And me, switch I'm just up. Like, after the first day we get married, that's just me naturally.
I need this love.
So, and then also when Dr. Jones was talking, it made me think of attachment styles. And maybe I'll do a self-care tip about that. Self-care tip slash mental moment with money. kidding. I would love my mental health moment. That's why I said her name. On attachment styles, but it made me think of people with avoidant attachment styles who will kind of like love bomb you. Like they will come in and they'll really act like they want this attachment, and then the moment it gets too much for them, they out.
What is up with that?
And it has narcissistic tendencies of that they'll find things that are wrong with you to kind of rationalize why this relationship with you will not work. So and funny things, I saw this meme that said that kind of depicted it with Virgos, and I had an
don't
issue.
Don't do my people like that.
No, and I had the same relationship with a Virgo, so I was like, these Virgos niggas ain't shit. But it was like, you know, it'll all be good, and he'll be like, a Virgo will be like, oh, I want a relationship, but look at how that bitch eat toast though. And I fell out, because it's so like, that's avoidant attachment. That's an avoidant attachment style. It'll be like, oh, I want a relationship, but look at her feet. She breathed too much. Nigga.
Cool. Yeah, well, next month, more things in store for next month. Yes. That you can't know about yet, but guess. I don't know. That would be cool. Ask April.
Oh. What you want us to do.
Exactly. Let us know what types of topics you want us to cover. And yeah, group recording next week where you get to hear from all the hosts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Sam told you to tell your friends about us. This is how you can do so. You can tell them to go follow us on Instagram at Inaho Uprising, Twitter at Inaho Uprising without the G, Facebook Inaho Uprising podcast. I don't know.
You just type Inaho Uprising
and you'll see my face.
You'll see all
literally
of our faces.
You'll see us. You guys can follow me at Hey A Cool Girl, that is HeyAKuAGirl on Instagram and Twitter.
You can follow me at Slam Rid on Instagram and Twitter, and Carmen Sam Diego on Instagram for travel and food photos. Austin photos coming pretty soon. Yeah, it's just mad white people.
Damn,
I'm just kidding.
Well,
I wouldn't take pictures of white people. I would never do that.
I should have known. I was like, why would she do that?
Yeah.
All right, bye.